From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, this is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Tonight I'm joined by the incomparable Cassandra Wilson.
My man's a lineman for the county. And he drives the main road. Always searching in the sun for another overload. I hear him singing.
It's been said you can never really go home again, but singer Cassandra Wilson has proven you can and make remarkable music when you get there. For her latest album, Belly of the Sun, Cassandra Wilson went back to her home state of Mississippi and converted an old train depot that served as a one-time stop for some of the greatest blues musicians of their time into her studio. Cassandra Wilson has a habit of going her own way. Her voice and virtuosity fit well in the lineage of the great jazz divas of Ella and Billy, Bessie and Sarah. But her sound and approach to her music is free range, not afraid to play, and this time close to the Mississippi earth and delta. Cassandra Wilson blends her husky contralto not with big bands and horns, but with folk instruments, guitars, and hand percussion. Her repertoire has swept well beyond show tunes and songbook classics. She is the jazz diva who roams wherever she likes to pop, folk, and blues. Her latest album pays homage to Bob Dylan, James Taylor, and blues man Robert Johnson.
And if it snows that stretch down south, we'll never stand the strain. I know I need him more than wanting.
Cassandra Wilson, welcome to On Point.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's great to have you. Love your album. It's just great. I was reading in the liner notes from Michael Simanga about the first time he heard you sing. He says it was 20 years ago in Laurel, Mississippi. You were singing at a little juke joint there in support of African-American women who were poultry workers on strike. And he describes the whole scene, the fried chicken and the catfish and the booze and everybody having a great time. And your voice just cutting right through all that. Now you've gone back to Mississippi to record your latest album, Belly of the Sun. It's a beautiful album. How did it feel to go back to your home state to record it?
Oh, it was wonderful. There's something that's very special about being in Mississippi. There's something very special about playing music in Mississippi. I think I had forgotten that or something, but I really enjoyed going back and hanging out with a few of my friends and making music.
You made this album in the fabled Clarksdale, where so many blues legends were born, and in a train station that you turned into a studio. How did you do it?
Well, very carefully. We were allowed the opportunity to take over the Clarksdale train depot, what was formerly the Clarksdale train depot, for 5 days. And it had been converted into a community center, and they also used it as a performance space for, you know, pieces of blues festivals that they have there. So we brought in a truck, a mobile recording truck from Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and ran a snake through to the facility and set up microphones. And we didn't have any baffling or anything. We just kind of made do. Danny Copelson, the engineer, did an incredible job changing the space into a recording space.
And this was just last August, so you must have had some hot times recording in Clarksdale.
Oh, yeah. It was extreme. Extreme heat.
As a kid, my family used to pile in the old jalopy every spring and drive down to the Gulf right through Mississippi, down Route 61. And I remember going through this whole area. And the red clay and cotton fields. I was in Greenville not long ago, drove down from Memphis, and it came back again. There really is something just in the air, in the quality of the air, in the vegetation. What is it? What does it breathe down there that made this the birthplace of the blues?
I don't know. That's a great question. I read somewhere once that the Delta used to be the bottom of the ocean in prehistoric times, and that's why it's so fertile. I don't know.
Maybe it's still giving off some vapors there.
Yeah, there's some depth there.
There sure is. I also know that feeling of going home from the urban east to the middle of the country, to the rural part of the country. Does that put you in a nostalgic mood? What juices does it get going to be back there and singing?
Well, my imagination just goes crazy whenever I'm in Mississippi. There's something about mm-hmm. being there, being in the nighttime especially, because mm-hmm. the night has such a wonderful flavor. It's just, well, there are many flavors in the night, and it's like it's a character. You know, the nighttime is a character in Mississippi.
It sure is.
And it's a thing about nature, you know, that it's the reverence that we have for nature, Mississippians, Southerners, and how much store we place in the signs of nature and living, you know, in according to the signs of nature.
You grew up in Jackson, a bigger town than Clarksdale, but still, mm-hmm. I guess when you were growing up, was right in the heart of the civil rights struggle.
Yes.
Medgar Evers was mm-hmm. shot not far from your home. Do you have active memories of that struggle?
I do. I was not allowed to go to any of the sit-ins. My father and my brothers went down to the Woolworth sit-in several times, and they did march. But they didn't allow me to go with them. But I do remember them going, and I do remember the night that Medgar Evers was killed. And I just remember the feeling that everybody had in the community. And it was very turbulent times, very difficult times. And as a child, you know, you don't quite understand what's happening, but you know you feel something is wrong.
You describe your friend Rhonda Richmond passing his house the next day and seeing the blood still on the carport.
Yes. Yeah, she described that in great detail.
We've got a cut coming up behind us here, Justice, off your new album, Belly of the Sun. Tell us about the song.
Well, I'd written the song after the last presidential election. Watching too much TV, I was glued to the television set, as I'm sure all of us were. And I was particularly disturbed by the events in Florida. So that song came from that, and it really worked well with what we were doing in the Delta, because when I went to Clarksdale for the first time, I realized how much like, I'm sure, some parts of Florida Clarksdale is, where people just have, you know, still are living in very impoverished conditions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just the perfect time to really do the song.
I think I'll have some of that. Now wrap it up real nice for me, please. Pass me a slice of opportunity. I'll have that slice of opportunity. I hear it fills you up, makes you shine just like summer buttercups. Summer buttercups. I think I'll have some of that. Wrap it up real nice.
Cassandra Wilson, I think a lot of Americans who don't travel through the South may not really understand what it looks like even today. The wood frame houses that the wind can blow right through, the poverty is still extreme in the part of the country and state where you made this album.
Yes, absolutely. It is very much still. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to see that kind of poverty, to witness it, and to drive away from it and, you know, realize that, wow, I live in America and people are still living like this. It's startling. I guess, you know, the Mississippi Delta and some parts of Appalachia still are very poor.
And for Americans who feel like we've, to some extent, you know, licked part of the race problem, the lines still seem very, very stark in the Delta.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing that's fairly obvious.
When you're there.
Yeah, especially when you're there. It is still very much a segregated society, a segregated culture, but there's so much paradox about all of that, too. You know, at the same time, at the same time, I talk about how wonderful the South is.
Right.
And how much warmth there is and how people pride themselves on hospitality. And although, you know, in Mississippi there's this history of, you know, such brutal racism, on the other side of that, there's also this great kindness that you can witness as well between the races. You know, there's a great understanding, and it's really difficult to explain. You have to be in it to get an appreciation of it.
Did you feel your New York body language changing when you're on the streets in Clarksdale? Did it somehow bleed into your voice as you cut these tracks on Belly of the Sun?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's the part of the reason why I like to go back twice a year, is to get my body language back, because I lose it when I go back to New York. But, yeah, you know, you kind of stand around with the arms akimbo a little bit more, and your hip has much more of a thrust out.
A little jut going on.
Yeah. Yeah, and you eat a little bit more because you can't be too thin, you know.
That's not New York.
Oh, no, that's not New York, but Mississippi. Women are luscious, shall we say.
They are. Can you still blend in? You've been in New York for 19, 20 years now. Can you still, you know, just make yourself part of the local scene in Mississippi?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mississippians are... That's the one thing I love about Mississippi. It's a very relaxed, very unpretentious place to be, and people are just people, and they want to be with you because of who you are, not because of what you do. Mm. And I love that about the South. And as I say, I go home twice a year, so it's not as if I left, actually. Mm-hmm. I've always been there.
You keep the tie. You went down with a blues-based record in mind, I guess, and it turned into much more than that, as many of your albums do. You've got this wonderful eclectic sense. But what was the goal when you went down? What were you headed out to do?
Didn't quite know. Mm-hmm. Most of my projects are like that. I don't know why. It's just the way I like to work. I plan for a little part of it. I'd say 30% of it is planned. I know, okay, we're going to do these songs, and we've got a pretty good idea of how we're going to do it. But there's always a space left for what happens to the band once they get there. And I think it's really important to leave that space open, because if you come down there with, you know, a preconceived notions about what you're going to do, you don't allow for the possibilities. You don't allow for what might happen. And some pretty magical things can happen when you're just sitting around with the guys and waiting, you know, trying to figure out, well, what are we going to do next? And it's really a wonderful feeling to be able to do that. They're great musicians, too, so I can't afford to do that.
Lucky you, and it sounds like some pretty magical things did happen. We're going to go into the break with a song everybody will know called You've Gotta Move, from a new album from Cassandra Wilson, new CD, Belly of the Sun. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
You gotta move. You gotta move. You gotta move, child. You gotta move. When the Lord gets ready, you gotta move. You may be black, you may be white, you may be wrong, you may be right. But when the Lord gets ready, you gotta move. Mm-hmm. You gotta move. You gotta move. You gotta move, child. You gotta move. And when the Lord gets ready, you gotta move. And when the Lord gets ready, you gotta move. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're joined this hour by Cassandra Wilson. We're talking about her great new album, Belly of the Sun. Here's a cut, Darkness on the Delta.
When it's darkness on the Delta, that's a time my heart is light. When it's darkness on the Delta, let me linger in the shelter of the night. Fields of cotton all around me, voices ringing soft and low. Lord, I'm lucky that you found me where the muddy Mississippi waters flow.
Cassandra Wilson, who is playing that piano?
Most remarkable young man. I call him a young man because he's a wonderful pianist from Greenville, Mississippi. His name's Boogaloo Ames. And I just met him when I went down there. I had not heard of him. But fortunately, I have friends who are always looking out for me down there. And they said, you got to get Boogaloo and you got to get him to play because he's a master.
A master, a young master, 83 years old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, he is.
What a great discovery. Did it put you back in his era? It was a little time travel going on with this song?
Oh, yeah, I had to go there with him. I had to go there with him. And I'm glad I did because he showed me something.
What was it?
And I can't tell you.
Mm-hmm. how does he see you? Here you are. You surely don't shed all the New York glamour coming down there. You're a different generation entirely. You've got this, I don't even know if he knows your music, but if he does, how did he look at you?
Actually, I did shed the New York glamour because I don't have any.
Oh, come on. We've seen your album covers. We know about your performances.
Well, the album covers are a function of marketing.
They work.
you take photographs, and those photographs are not how you look every day.
Well, you do it well.
Well, thank you. But, when I'm in Mississippi, I'm just a good old girl.
Yeah.
And he was very receptive. He's a sweet man, very sweet. He warmed up to me almost immediately. And, you know, we got to talk, and I sat next to him on the piano. And he would lean back and laugh at me. And he'd look over at his friend who had brought him there, named Eden Brent. And he'd say, oh, she can sing.
He was happy to be there.
Oh, he was so tickled. We were both just tickled to be with each other.
I have to tell you, I hope you get back together with him before the end of time.
You know, I'm speaking of him in the present because I always believed it's important to do that. But he passed away.
Oh, boy, was it a good thing for him and you and all of us that you got together before he did?
Yeah, I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to work with him.
Yeah. Cassandra Wilson, you grew up in Jackson. Mother was a teacher and father a jazz player. And you started out with the regular piano and clarinet and the high school marching band. How did you discover your singing voice?
Well, I always sang. My mother tells me that I sang so much that it annoyed her. I've been singing since I was 5 years old. And because I'd been exposed to jazz at an early age, I was always making up songs and I was always singing, imitating instruments and, you know, just improvising music. So that's always been with me.
Here's what I want to know. Every time I listen to one of your albums, I'm just dying to understand how a person, a woman, grows into that voice. You've got such tremendous range. You can get so down and deep. It just blows me away. But part of that is physical and the capacity to sing, but part of it must also be just growing emotionally into the big shoes that you've got now to sort of fill up that voice. Now, is it like spelunking? Do you discover it like parts of a cave, or do you just automatically know it's there?
I'm sorry, what'd you say, spelunking?
Oh, you know, where you get way down underground. How do you discover the dimensions of a voice as big as yours?
Well, I guess time. Time does that for us all. We learn about ourselves slowly.
Life experience, does that come in? Do you get whacked around and then respond with a new part of the voice you didn't know was there, or new coloring you didn't know was there? Could be there.
Yeah, well, I think that's so important. I don't think you can do any of this without life experience. You have to be able to use your experiences to express yourself. And, of course, every new experience becomes a part of your instrument, becomes a part of how you explain the world around you.
Mm-hmm. You're famously brave enough to do that through all kinds of singers and songs on this album. There are songs. We opened with Jimmy Webb, the great Wichita Lineman rendition. You've got Bob Dylan on here, Shelter from the Storm. You'll just take that voice wherever you like. How do you decide what songs you're going to pounce on and pull into an album?
Well, I like to describe it as the songs choosing me. I'm not really one of those people who likes, you know, finds a song and says, oh, I've got to do this, and I stick to it. I kind of let things happen, and usually the song will keep coming up. It will, you know, be a recurring thing, and somehow you can't get away from it. So that's how they happen.
When you sing a Bob Dylan song, do you listen back to Bob Dylan, or do you just remember it and pick up the lyrics and go?
Of course I listen back to it. And, you know, Blood on the Tracks is one of my favorite albums, mm-hmm. or Shelter from the Storm is one. Mm-hmm. And I love Bob Dylan, and, you know, I've been listening to him for a long time. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I went back to that album right after September 11th. Mm-hmm. So I started listening to it again. I love that, always love that piece.
'Twas in another lifetime, full of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue and the world was full of mud. He came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
Cassandra Wilson singing Bob Dylan's Shelter from the Storm. You've taken grief from the critics over the years for not sticking to the old jazz songbook, and yet you put your chin right back out there every time, and I'm glad that you do. What is your attitude toward, I mean, you seem to feel totally free, not bound by the lineage of Ella and everybody else. But why do you think people keep coming back and saying she's wandering off the reservation?
I don't know. I look at it as a cry for help. I think that they...
Oh, yeah? Is their cry for help?
Yeah. I think that they don't understand... You know, they have they have great difficulty being able to explain what it is, because it's something mm-hmm. that's very new. It's a very unusual approach. So.
Well, you've got clearly the capacity to do that, and you know, and then you go off and you do cover Joni Mitchell and Van Morrison, U2, Neil Young, the Monkees even. And some critics just stamp their feet about it and say, what is she doing?
Yeah, but what has that got to do with me?
I mean, yeah. I'm just curious if you feel as though people would like to press that beautiful voice of yours down into a tradition that you obviously want to range away from and around.
Well, I don't look at it as being going, you know, I'm not leaving the tradition.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that, I mean, that's just not how I see the way this music has evolved.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really be true to jazz and continue to imitate. Mm-hmm. You can't be true to jazz and continue to use the same vehicle or the same vessel or the same approach that everybody else is using.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the reason that they love Ella and Sarah mm-hmm. now is because they have time. They have perspective. If they were living then, they may have thought something entirely. They
right.
might have said, oh,
right.
why is she singing Chinese music?
Right.
Why does she do this? What is this Ababadinga?
Right.
You know?
What happened to ragtime?
What happened to ragtime? Why can't she sing a song? So
yeah,
everything.
I'm sure you're right.
You have to put everything in perspective.
I'm sure you're right. Let's listen to a little bit of Hot Tamales. You know, Clarksdale is famously the place in Blues Lore where blues man Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil at the crossroads of Highways 61 and 49. Here's Cassandra Wilson with her version of Hot Tamales.
Hot tamales in the red, hot, yes, Clarksdale. Hot tamales in the red, hot.
pot, yes, got the same. I got a man says long and tall. We're sleeping in the kitchen with the feet in the hall. Hot tamales in the red hot. Yes, got the same. Yes, sir. Yes, got the same. Hot tamales in the red hot. Yes, got the same. Hot tamales in the red hot. Yes, got the same. He got 2 for a nickel, got 4 for a dime. Well, I would sell you more, but they ain't none of mine. Hot tamales in the red hot. Yes, got the same. Yes, got the same. Yes, it's got to sell. Hot tamales in the red hot. Yes, it's got to sell. Sweet little love, the little love, the day, bop, the bop, the bop, the bop. Hot tamales in the red hot. Yes, it's got to sell. Oh, yeah. Yes, it's got to sell. Hot tamales in the red hot. Yes, it's got to sell. Hot tamales in the red hot. Yes, it's got to sell. Got to sell. Long, tall, sleeves in the kitchen with the feet in the hollow. Hot tamales in the red hot. Yes, it's got to sell. Yes, sir. Yes, it's got to sell. Oh, yeah.
Cassandra Wilson, all shook up with hot tamales. Let me ask you about sexuality and song, because you sure know how to put a lot of it across. Did you grow into that as well? Do you have to put yourself in a special frame of mind? Is it a particular song that brings it out? How do you make it happen?
Well... How do I make what? What do I have to do? I have to. Well, that's a difficult question to answer without.
Well, is it?
Being
is it? Well, let's look at it this way. You know, actors deal with this all the time, right? And there's an element of singing that's also clearly theater. And you know, so are you a method actor, or do
yes,
you?
Yes, I am. I am a method singer, most assuredly. I identify very much with that approach. And I do tap into experiences. I go there every time. I go inside of my head and I find an experience. And I am able to then sing based on the all of those feelings that come from remembering that experience.
And you know,
I don't know if that's method, but...
Well, it clearly works, and in your case, it works with such a kind of strength around it. I know you've talked about the position, the traditional position of women and the kind of matriarchy in Mississippi. Boy, it's strong and powerful and wonderful in your work. How did that get handed down to you? Is it your mother, your grandmother? Who gave you the courage to exercise the chutzpah, if you want to get New York, to exercise all that feminine strength in your music?
I don't know. I guess I've never known anything else, I don't think. Growing up in Mississippi, that's just a part of the way we are. Women are very, very strong. And in Mississippi, there's great respect for women. And I was fortunate enough to grow up in a household where I had my grandmother and my mother, and I saw the relationship that they had, and I witnessed the relationship that they had with other women, and there was always this structure, you know, this community of women who pretty much issued you through everything that you needed to deal with in growing up and coming of age, and I think I'm very fortunate to have a mother like mine. She's a very strong-willed woman. She came from a very poor background. Her grandmother was born into slavery
in Mississippi, and, Cassandra, or
yes, and actually in Georgia.
Okay,
in Georgia, and. She achieved a lot in her life. My grandmother had a great love of books and knowledge, and she insisted that my mother get an education.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was the first in her family to become a doctor. She has a doctorate,
PhD,
in education.
Mm-hmm. And you say that she sang to you, that she communicated to you in every color imaginable. What do you mean by that?
I mean that if there was a feeling that she had, I saw it and I heard about it. If there was a feeling that she had about me, about what I was doing, about anything, about life, about whatever it was. You know how you hear about parents who aren't able to communicate?
That was not your mom.
Children? Ooh, no. No. And her voice, when I talk about, excuse me, when I talk about her singing,
yeah.
She literally sings when she talks. She has a very mellifluous voice.
Uh-huh.
And
she's using
sweet.
The tune along with the words to get the message
mm-hmm.
across.
To get the message, to teach the lesson.
I suppose that makes an imprint on a daughter that never goes away, that shows you how it can all be used.
Mm-hmm.
You said, I was fascinated, you said your grandmother knew all the old folk remedies and was around, but you said that she never took your generation into the woods like that, meaning not into the kind of funkiness of all the old lore?
Yeah, well, I don't think that they realized how important all of that was. I think that they looked at it pretty much as some, you know, an old way, you know, mm-hmm. An old school, you know, old school of thought, an old approach to healing, an old approach to spirituality. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure that they felt that, you know, the next generation was so involved in integrating into an entirely different culture that, you know, perhaps it's not wise to try to show them this.
Can you still find your way back to it somewhere in the circuits of memory and I don't know, poetry, body language that your mother and grandmother passed on?
I do, because I don't think it ever goes anywhere. I think no matter what they do to try to hide it, it's always going to be just beneath the surface.
We're going to go into a break with Cassandra Wilson singing the James Taylor Penn song, Only a Dream in Rio, from her new CD, Belly of the Sun. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
More than a distant land, over a shining sea, more than the steaming green, more than the shining eyes. They tell me it's only a dream. As it seems on this very first day down, they remind me, girl, have you so soon forgotten? Often as not, it is rotten inside, and the mask seems to say, wait. Strange taste of a chocolate perfume, romantic language of the Portuguese.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Cassandra Wilson. Here, from her new album, Belly of the Sun, is Just Another Parade.
Yesterday's news is tomorrow's blues. But today I am alive. Today I did much more than survive.
Ooh, I learned to live by the love I give. It's the only thing I shadowed valleys that I've known help me build my home.
Cassandra Wilson, it's a great song, and it's yours. Do you remember when you composed it and what brought it to mind?
That was written right after September 11th, and it was written for the duet or the song that I did with India Irie, and mm-hmm. Rhonda Richmond is singing as well. It's a song about dealing with your life and rolling with the punches and mm-hmm. just going with it and not being fearful. It's a song about putting things in perspective and realizing, hey, this is not the end of the world. Life goes on.
You sang it with India Arie, who many of us know and many others saw at the Grammys this year. Wonderful voice. Mm-hmm. How did you get connected with India Arie, and how was it singing with her?
I was introduced to her through her manager. He called me one night, and he said it'd be a great idea for her to do something on the record.
As I recall, you're one of her inspirations. She's a much younger singer.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I had no idea. I had been listening to her. I heard her cut video on the record, and I thought, you know, it's a great song. I really love her voice. Mm-hmm. But he told me that she had been listening to my music, and I was really shocked, and it's great. I said, yeah, I'd love to do something with her. And she came to the studio and did the song in one day, and I was very amazed that she was able to sing so beautifully, so quickly. And it's a deceptive song. It's not that easy to sing.
Mm-hmm. the combination is just wonderful. I saw Stanley Crouch wrote that you, Cassandra Wilson, sing through your skin. I think Stanley Crouch was falling in love with you a little bit as he wrote this review. I think this is off something you sang at Lincoln Center. He said that you're always wrapped up, as though you're always wrapped up with a man in the perfect congress of grace, style, and power. Hmm. We opened the hour with the Wichita Lineman, and I thought as I listened to you sing that, it's a song you turned around, not the Wichita Lineman singing about his own life, but the woman, I guess in Kansas, if it's Wichita, at home, and I just pictured it on a long, hot afternoon, thinking about her man out there somewhere on the line. You've got this capacity to give yourself over to that voice of devotion and longing. It's a wonderful thing.
I love to do it. I love to get inside of that emotion. It's one of my favorite emotions to have and to express. Wichita Lineman is a very powerful song because it's primal, you know. It's not about anything but what happens between a man and a woman. And it's always a wonderful feeling for me to be inside of that.
And yet, I heard you sing it, Cassandra Wilson, I just remembered Glenn Campbell in his kind of tight white pants and rhinestones, you know, like a country dandy singing it. And I have to say, it was a whole new song to me when I heard you do it.
Really?
Well, yeah. Well, yes.
Huh. I don't know. You know, when I heard Glenn Campbell sing it, I don't remember the rhinestones. I just remember the lyric. I remember that the lyric has always been so powerful. I know I need him more than want him, and I want him
for all time.
That's some pretty powerful wanting and needing.
Yes, it is. But I think that may have been a song that benefited by you going home. It has so much atmospheric about it. This did not feel recorded in Los Angeles or New York.
No.
This felt recorded somewhere else. Beautiful sense of place in there. Mm-hmm. The pop songs that you go to, are they always your choosing? Do you have a committee that sits around? How do things get on your screen?
Well, the songs choose me. It's very difficult to describe the process. Songs come to you, and they either will stay or they will go away, one or the other. And the ones that stay with you are the ones that are asking to be done. And Wichita Lineman was certainly a song like that. Only a Dream in Rio. Milton Nascimento, one of my favorite musicians, and I actually heard his version first before I realized that James Taylor did it. And I thought it was interesting, the perspective, what a different perspective he had. And Belly of the Sun really is a collection of perspectives. It's more than one way to read this album. It's like, it's not just about, you know, a bunch of songs that happen to seem to come together. There's a story behind it, and there's a prize for the first person who can figure out what the story is.
Well, I wouldn't mind spending some time doing that. Cassandra Wilson, our time has flown by. We're so glad that you joined us tonight, and want to thank you. You're a gift to us all, and keep singing. Thanks so much for being with On Point.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate
it. Cool spirits, I can feel you moving me. Cool spirits, when you're near, road so clean.
Cassandra Wilson's new CD is called Belly of the Sun. If you're in the Boston area this weekend, Cassandra Wilson will be performing at Symphony Hall Saturday night at 8 p.m. For more information, go to our website at onpointradio.org. Coming up, Jack Beatty and I look back at this week's news. This is On Point.
Road so clean.
In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this week's news.
I believe that this meeting, with God's help, can be a turnaround. I believe it can begin the process of winning back the confidence of the American people, especially American Catholic people, which we've lost a bit, more than a bit, in the last few months.
It was a political earthquake, which by the end of the day will appear only as a very severe warning to the political class. By the end of the day, Jacques Chirac will be the president of France. People didn't vote for Le Pen to elect Le Pen.
Negotiations are continuing to end the weeks-old standoff. Both sides say they are hopeful it will come to a speedy conclusion. On Thursday, 9 Palestinian teenagers came out of the church. 8 have been released so far. 1 is being held pending further investigation.
The Security Council decided that the mission would cover the refugee camp of Jenin and would only be fact-finding. And then within 2 or 3 days, all of a sudden the Secretary General is talking about Jenin being the beginning, and it not only being fact-finding, but it also be coming to conclusions.
We thought that the Israeli side did not have anything to hide. Obviously they do.
I made it clear to him that I expected Israel to withdraw, just like I've made it clear to Israel. And we expect them to be finished. He knows my position. He's a man with enormous influence in the Middle East. I respect that a lot. And I'm confident we can work together to achieve a peace.
And there is absolutely no reason at this point to believe there's anything suspicious about this explosion. There were volatile chemicals in the building. There was a sign company that was using some of these chemicals.
Heavily armed officers began a floor-by-floor search for the gunman, allowing ambulance crews to reach some of the casualties and releasing almost 200 children and staff who'd been trapped in the building.
And there's the week. Cardinal Theodore McCarrick of Washington, D.C., putting a positive spin on this week's meeting at the Vatican. Extreme right-winger Jean-Marie Le Pen shaking up the politics in France. Standoff at the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. Israel protesting a U.N. fact-finding mission to Jenin, and the Palestinians' U.N. rep saying Israel must have something to hide. Then President Bush getting ready for Saudi press prince, Crown Prince Abdullah in Crawford, Texas. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg noting that the explosion with relief was not terror in New York this week. And finally, today's report of the tragic shootings at a school in Germany where 18 people died and a student who was recently expelled and killed himself. Jack Beatty, here we go round and round. And probably above all, we're looking this week at these two men in Crawford, Texas, a crown prince from Saudi Arabia and a kind of prince of the American political world, George W. Bush, meeting over the biggest of issues.
Yeah, oil, the future relations with Saudi Arabia, it's all on the line. This is the second time that the Crown Prince has essentially warned the president about events in the Middle East. In August, he sent a letter that basically said, well, this was when the Bush administration was doing nothing there and is letting the problem fester and the violence was getting worse. And he wrote a letter to President Bush in which he said, our nations are going to have to part. We're going to have to, you're going to have to go your way, and we're going to have to go our way because this is, we can't stand this any longer. And Bush was shocked and immediately wrote him a letter which said, in which he said, the death of a Palestinian infant is as important to me as the death of an Israeli infant, and we care. And then the post-September 11th announcement of Bush and Powell and then Bush for the, you know, we wanted a Palestinian state. This was part of the effort to meet the objections Crown Prince Abdullah was making then. And now, of course, he's repeating them and in a more time-sensitive context for the Bush administration, wanting to fight the war on terror, wanting to expand it to Iraq, and needing cooperation from the Arab states to do both.
As emphatic as he could be, it strikes me it wasn't long ago that that Washington was talking about being the instigator of regime change and even reshaping the map of the Middle East. Now the Crown Prince from Saudi Arabia is saying, you know what, we may be driving this ship and driving it away from you.
Yeah, and of course already just the talk between them has put up oil prices a little bit, and all that is very scary, what could happen on that front, which of course to Bush could mean, you know, serious political repercussions. On the other hand, Bush is torn. I mean, he's got his right wing. He's got the commentariat who are all saying, you know, don't deal with Arafat. Sharon is doing the right thing. Stay behind Israel. He's torn between that and the necessity of showing some, you know, some movement.
Meanwhile, Sharon as tough as ever this week and going into even new locations on the West Bank today, even as Bush called again for withdrawal.
Yeah, and a piece of news that really got my attention. The New York Times calls it a historic miscalculation. Sharon, his army people came to him and said, "Can we pull in some of the more vulnerable settlements? They're vulnerable themselves, and our troops are vulnerable protecting them." And Sharon said, "No, not a single settlement is going to be pulled in as long as he's in power. In fact, there'll be no discussion allowed on it." He also, Powell brought this up with him about settlements in Gaza, and he turned Powell down cold, too.
Hard to have a political solution when you can't discuss settlements.
It really is, and this was quite a statement. You know, people are always saying, well, what is the Sharon plan for peace? Clearly, it doesn't include anything on settlements.
Jack, we just got 30 seconds, but it was quite a week at the Vatican. America meets Rome.
Yeah, hard to figure that one out, whether this was an exercise in public relations or in policy change. But it's clear that the laity over here doesn't think this fudge that the cardinals came out with, well, if you're a chronic offender, then we'll get you out. If you just do it once or twice, that's okay. But, of course, that's how chronic offenders begin, and a very muddled message from them. And I think the bishops in their meeting in Dallas in June are going to have to come down for zero tolerance.
There'll be a lot on the table. Jack, have a great weekend. Thanks for being with us.
And you too.
On Point is produced by Micheline Boudreau, Meghna Chakrabarty, Nate DeMeo, Eileen Imada, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. On Point is a production of WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is